Howdy, y'all. You're listening to The Managing Up Show, a podcast about leading and managing in the world of technology. I'm your host, Nick Means, and with me this week are Travis Swicegood.
Howdy.
And Brandon Hayes.
Hello. So this is it, folks. We got a wild hair and decided to record an episode about what the podcast is actually called, and we wanted to talk about managing up. So I'm really excited to talk about this and also a little intimidated by it, because the concept of managing up is potentially so big. It can mean so many different things. And I wanted to open that up to the group first to say, in your experience, when people talk about managing up, what connotations does that have for you? Is it positive, negative? Does it mean something specific? Does it mean something different now that you're in management from before?
I mean, when somebody's looking for help managing up, when that's the context of the question, they're usually saying, I have a crappy boss and I don't know what to do about it.
Wow, you're coming out swinging. The spicy takes right out of the gate, Nick. I love it. I'm here for it.
I mean, it's true though, right? Like, you know, there's managing up. It's such a broad topic. It means so many things, but it doesn't come to mind very often. It's like a referee in a soccer match. If the officiating's good, you don't notice the referee. But if the officiating's bad, it's all you're talking about. And that's kind of the context that managing up always comes up in, is you think about it when you're suffering through a bad management relationship. You don't think about it very often when you're pretty satisfied with your manager and your interactions with that person.
That's a good point. It's like when you experience friction, you only notice it when the friction is rubbing. Otherwise, it's so like frictionless that it doesn't like raise any challenges for you in a way that causes you to think about what is this? Why am I struggling to do this? What do I do? Those questions don't appear because the relationship is somewhat frictionless and you're getting the support you actually need.
Yeah. I mean, this is very much the old story about the fish. The old fish is swimming by the two young fish and he says, "Hey, how's the water today?" And they're like, "Oh, it's great." A few minutes later, like, "Hey, what's water?" Like that's the managing up story right there. If you have a good boss, you're not even thinking about it. If you have that friction, if you have that thing that you're constantly thinking about it, then you're like, "Hey, I need help managing up."
I think it's probably because of that for me, I think the concept of managing up has largely negative connotations. I think I'd never really thought about that until you just said that. Both you, Nick and Travis, about it only emerges as a concept when people experience that friction or when they are dealing with like a crappy boss or a crappy situation at work or a reporting structure that doesn't support them in the way they want to be supported, or their ideas aren't getting through for some reason or whatever it is. When they say I need help managing up, it could be a number of different things, but it all adds up to I'm not getting the kind of support that I need right now. How do I get that support? Because I think I know the right thing to do, but I'm not able to get that done.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that I love about this show, is something just crystallized in my mind that I've never really thought about. And it's, you know, when you're asking for, when you're in a good management relationship, when you've got a manager you really enjoy working with, it feels like a productive relationship. One of the reasons it's productive is that manager is generally very clear about what they need from you, and they ask you what you need from them. There's a two-way flow of information that sets the boundaries of that relationship in a very productive way and helps coordinate you and your manager around how you work together. When you're having to actively manage up, a lot of times it's because that connection is missing and you're trying to figure out how to give your manager critical information that they need that they're not asking you for, that they're not actively seeking.
Boy, I feel like you just touched on a thing that is almost an episode unto itself entirely. How do you provide feedback to somebody who isn't asking for it? It's one thing if you're the manager dealing with a subordinate, like that's kind of your job to provide that feedback and say, "Hey, this is something you need to be thinking about." It's an entirely different conversation if that's somebody that you report to.
And I suspect this is a painful topic for folks that listen to this show particularly, because folks that listen to the show tend to self-select for the reason that they're pretty good managers that are trying to be better. And so they provide that kind of relationship to the people that they manage. And really, when they ask us about managing up, it's because they want their manager to provide the same thing to them and they don't quite know how to get it. So maybe that's a productive place for us to start. Like, we've all been in relationships with a manager like that. What are some of the things that y'all have tried when you're in one of those situations to improve that relationship, no matter how marginally, no matter how small the improvement was? What are some of the things that you found work?
So you mean like when your baseline relationship is not strong and you're looking to kind of build a relationship of trust and a reporting structure where something is a little wobbly?
Yeah.
That's a harder question in a remote culture, actually, because it used to be. You get to know somebody as a person in an outside of work context and realize, so the answer first and foremost is to rehumanize each other. Because whenever there's that weakness or tension in a relationship, there's often you're viewing something from two different perspectives and you want potentially different things, or you perceive that you each want different things, and you have a story in your head about the other person, right? You have two people with different stories in their head about another person, and the harder you push into those two stories to try to make them line up, the worse things get. That whole thing just kind of, it's like tectonic plates that crash into each other. And my experience is you have to actually pull back and let that breathe a little bit and experience each other as human beings. And that's so much harder in remote culture because there's almost never a reason to get people together that isn't directly work related to accomplish some goal. And so I'm actually going to throw it back and solicit ideas. I have some experiences that have been relatively positive, but how do you rehumanize people in any conflict situation, particularly when there's a power dynamic differential in a remote context, now that, you know, half the world is remote?
And you're not going to like this answer, but the answer is that you spend time with them in real life. You sit down to a meal together. You do something to see each other face to face.
That's the easy answer. And I 100% agree with you that like, that's the easiest, most straightforward way. But I think there is a way to do it where you're still fully remote. And it's to make sure that you hold that space in the interactions that you have and say, this is the time where we talk about random things. Like the first 5 minutes of every meeting is going to be a just, hey, let's check in what's going on in your world. And this comes back to something that I've said, I feel like I've said a lot over the last few years. Being remote and being successful at being remote means being a lot more intentional about every interaction that you have, because you don't have those random, hey, it's 4:30 and we're done for the day. Let's go grab a beer and just chat for the next hour and a half. You don't have those opportunities like you would if you were sharing the same physical space. So you have to be more intentional about it, and having that space at the beginning, at the end of a meeting, and creating that place where you can actually just have a human conversation. You can do some of that. It's a lot harder. It's definitely a lot easier to say, hey, are you doing anything for lunch? Let's go grab lunch. It's noon. And then just have a completely off the books lunch where like, this is just about us getting to know each other as human beings. That's a much easier path. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I feel like it might be sounding like I mean that as a derogatory thing. No, if you can do that, by all means, do that. Some of the best relationships I've built with individuals have been over that. Hey, what do you got any plans for lunch? Let's go grab lunch. Like that's a great move. But in the situation where you can't do that, you can create that space. You just have to be a lot more intentional about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally valid. You know, I think if I think about how much time I spend on topic versus off topic with my manager or with the people I manage in one-on-ones, way more of it is just the human connection side of things, because I think that's actually far more important to building a productive relationship than talking about work is for the most part. But I've also, in response to a surprise manager change, gotten on a plane and flown to that manager's city to spend time with them. I've gotten permission from that manager to do it because my thinking was that was the only way to productively start that relationship. And that paid a lot of dividends, but I was fortunate to be able to do it in that situation. And that's not true everywhere, every time.
You know, and that's a totally fair thing. I think the situation that you were in was a, how can I kickstart this? Not a, how can I make this work? Which is kind of the world that we've inhabited for much of the last 2 years. Is like, how do I make progress in this morass that I am in right now? I mean, that's a, it's a different mindset. In a world where it is a reasonable thing to hop on a plane tomorrow or next week, and you have the ability to do that, by all means, do that.
I love that, Travis, that you made that distinction, because Nick, you said three words that are still ringing in my ears, and it is start that relationship. And it might be months into a relationship, but into a work relationship, but you may not yet have started that relationship. If you don't have any kind of relationship of trust with someone that you have to work with closely, the thing that keeps coming up for me in talking through this is how much discipline it takes to allow space to humanize somebody that you're currently disagreeing with. There's no benefit to not humanizing them, to villainizing this person, or to put them in a box, to attach what you know, what your frustration with them is to that person. There's just no benefit to it. There are lots of like Game of Thrones. I'm sorry if people like tuned into this show and are like, oh, teach me the Game of Thrones shit.
I just, if they stayed this long and they're still looking for that,
my
reevaluate where you're like your perceptions here.
My top personal value is authenticity, and I cannot. I'll die like Ned Stark died in Game of Thrones. If that's the game we're playing, I'm sorry. I'm just going down. Not everybody is going to be playing the game by the same rules as me, and some people are going to openly exploit. But boy, those cases are so rare that your best bet, at least in my experience, is to humanize that person and leave the room open for them to have that humanity, so that the next time you have a conversation, you're able to veer away from just the sheer tactics or just the disagreement. As much as I hate it, that does work. Even virtual no sites, where I keep having these virtual offsites, and I hate it because I really want to get my teams together in person. It's still better than nothing.
I mean, that's what's funny about this, right? Like, you know, if you pressed me and you said, what is the 101 lesson of managing up? The way I would distill it down is that everything that you do with the people that you manage to build that relationship, to build that rapport, to build that human connection, do it up. That all of that stuff applies both directions, to managing the folks that you manage and to managing your boss, to managing up. It's all based in human connection. And if you want anything else to go well, that's the foundation.
And so from there, once you have that base, that's the, like you said, that's the foundation. That's the concrete foundation that you can build anything else on top of. You get nothing until you have something like that. Otherwise, you're going to be tilted against this person, and you're going to be like swimming up a fast moving current the entire time you're trying to do anything. And you're going to find yourself moving backwards instead of forwards. So you've really got to lay that foundation first. And then a bunch of stuff opens up. Another question that I think fits into this is how much of your manager's job do you have to do for them? And by varying definitions of what managers do, some managers think their job is to manage projects and nothing else. Some managers think they're tech leads. Nobody that listens to this podcast probably thinks that their job is to be the tech lead. But for the sake of argument, there's varying definitions of what a manager does. How much of their, how much of your career, and if you're a manager and your boss is a director, or you're, you know, a director and your boss is a VP, you may find decreasing levels of support for these things, and you have to take on increasing amounts of self-management. Or you may find yourself at a startup where they haven't yet even hired their first manager, and self-management is the entire game.
Man, I have never wished that we did a video podcast more than right now, just for catching Nick's reactions to your conversation.
Screenshot.
Violent nodding is the way that I would describe it.
Yes,
with a firm grimace. So things like Things like keeping a brag document on hand and tracking your own accomplishments. I don't care how good your manager is. In fact, if your manager is really good, they're probably giving you this as homework. This is something that people need to be able to do for themselves, is remind themselves of things that they've done, accomplishments that they're proud of, and progress toward their own goals and what their own goals even are. A good manager will fish that out for you, but if they haven't, you can kind of insist on that, or even just quietly track it yourself.
You know, I think that's a great thing to spend a few minutes on. A lot of times when you get into that situation where you're like, okay, well, how do I manage up the situation? Something has gone haywire. You're trying to figure it out. And if you don't have that document, and there are definitely situations where you might have that document, and you're still like, okay, what do I do next? But if you don't have that, it's amazing what spending that few hours actually writing out, okay, what's happened in the last 6 months or 9 months or a year? What are the accomplishments that I have helped shepherd across the line? It's amazing the number of things that you forget if you don't have that. So to your point, Brandon, the idea of it, ideally a good manager is already telling you, hey, like, why don't you create this? Let's review this on a regular basis. A good manager would be doing that. We're in a situation where, for whatever reason, and there are many valid and completely invalid reasons where you might find yourself in a place where you don't have that manager that's providing that support to you, take it upon yourself.
Yeah. In that case, you're making your manager a better manager.
Yeah.
Because it's, you're not just doing their job for them. You're showing them what you need from them. And I think that dovetails into a different point. The best management relationships in my career have been when my reports are direct with me about what they need from me. Mm-hmm. Don't you love it when people know how they want to be managed? That's not how to manage me. This is how to manage me. Oh, wow. I haven't ever managed that way before. You're teaching me a new way to manage and growing my heuristic catalog of management skills so that I can manage more types of people with different needs. The more well-informed opinions you have about how you want to be managed, the better that relationship is likely to be, again, if, assuming good faith and good actor on the manager's part. But at least by making those expectations clear, you open the room for negotiation. I think that's a really undervalued form of managing up, which is to teach your manager how you want to be managed. There's a specific story around this that I may have shared on this podcast before, and I shared it in a story for an article that I did not write. I'll link to it in the show notes, but basically a time somebody told me a very difficult truth about, I think I heard it differently than he said it. He probably said, hey, I don't feel heard when we talk. And I interpreted that as, Brandon, you're a garbage listener. And it set me on this quest for active listening skills. I'm so grateful for that. And I think telling the truth is another great form of managing up. Like, hey, and it's in the same vein of, here's something I need from you, and I'm not getting it right now. And the more specific you are about that, the more valuable that feedback is. Like, when we talk, I don't feel heard. Or I've asked you to do this thing and I didn't get it, and it made it, you know, the situation behavior impact, but upwards. Like, here was a situation. I needed my manager to step up for me in this way. I didn't get that from you, and that actually caused some harm. That kind of feedback, managers are able to take action on that.
I mean, I think so. One of the lessons that I've learned in the last year or two that's been really useful in this direction is not to focus on them and your perception of what they did, not and why they might have done it, but to really focus on, and here's how it made me feel. Here's how it impacted me. Here's how it affected me. Because oftentimes that's the missing piece of the puzzle. It's always an unlock when you get it from somebody you manage, and it's going to be just as much of an unlock to your manager. If they did something and it made you feel a certain way, that probably wasn't the way they intended to make you feel in the first place. They made you feel judged. They made you feel attacked. They made you feel doubted. They didn't intend that. They were just trying to give you feedback. And by telling them, okay, so you gave me feedback this way, this is how it made me feel, this is what works better with me, you can help them learn to manage you better.
I learned this from you, Travis. Was it you that taught me the concept of the side of the net?
Yeah.
That you're on your side of the net, their side of the net, from the book Connect?
Yep.
So there's a book called Connect, Building Exceptional Relationships. Colleagues, we'll link to it in the show notes also. I recommend this book to somebody probably once a week now. It's not a book about management. It's probably one of the most impactful management books I've ever read. And one of the core concepts is that, hey, when I'm talking about my feelings and not, I feel that you don't trust me, like that's still your side of the net. That's incorrect.
Yeah.
But I felt judged. I felt less than. I felt incapable when you took this project away from me.
Well, to say what you just said, I felt that you don't trust me. I felt untrusted. Those are two vastly different statements. Yep. To say, Brandon, I felt that you don't trust me. I 100% attributed that to you. That puts you in a defensive posture.
I don't know how I feel.
Yeah,
I don't know whether I trust you.
I've just said I just made a value judgment about you. But you say
that was a fiction, and I immediately actually got my hackles up.
Again, I kind of wish we had video here because I could totally see the physical reaction to the ugh.
What? I trust you. What?
There was a tensing of muscles there. But to say I felt untrusted is a totally different thing. And it sounds a little bit weird to say that, even to say, hey, Brandon, I totally felt like you didn't trust me to handle X. That feels like a natural thing to say. That's the kind of thing that I say. It comes out naturally. It kind of flows. But to say, you know what? I really felt untrusted when I was dealing with X. It feels a little awkward. And I think it's that interrupt that happens there. That reframing kind of interjects that pause in the processing of that information for you to be able to say, oh, hang on just a second. Let me try to process what's happening here. And sometimes like it's that little pause that's all you need to be able to process that feedback in a constructive way. You can totally take the exact same sentiment out of both of those statements, but by choosing to frame it in a, this sounds like I'm making a value judgment, but in a more productive way to not attribute it to anybody but me.
Right. In a more personal way.
Yeah. To say that this is hey, this is how I felt. It personalizes it in a way that almost feels a little awkward, but just enough to pull you out of your normal process of a response.
Yeah, I mean, it short circuits that initial defensiveness that you often feel when somebody gives you that kind of feedback.
Yeah,
it gives you a second to take in that feeling as the information that it's being offered as versus the attack that it's easy to feel sometimes, and right. It makes for a much more productive conversation.
And it's irrefutable. Because you own that. Yeah. Hey, you can tell me my, you don't understand why I felt the way I do, but you don't get to tell me I didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
So I'm now, you actually move out of the realm of conjecture into the realm of facts. As soon as I project onto somebody else and I feel that you don't value blah, or I didn't feel heard, or I didn't feel valued. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, I'm not, that would be stupid to argue with. You're talking about your feelings. That's yours. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have to respect that. You know, an interesting aspect of that is how much more that comes up in managing up than when you're managing your reports. Because it's not my report's job to watch my feelings. That's the, and I think this is really important for managers to understand. That doesn't mean that I don't ever talk about my feelings, and it doesn't mean I wouldn't call somebody out if they did something specifically hurtful. But it's generally not that the power dynamic is such that I'm in charge of managing my feelings. They are not in charge of it. But when I'm managing up, I can talk about my feelings and how I felt as a result of something that my boss did. That's fair territory.
And that's a territory that feels really uncomfortable, I think, for a lot of people.
It's always uncomfortable and it's scary because these people, the power dynamic is right there. These people have more power than you.
No, 100%. But like my feelings about somebody that reports to me are totally different and have a totally different class in how I would even approach them versus my feelings to somebody who I report to. But you have to actually like step back and consciously think about that to recognize the difference of those two things. Because the same, it's my feelings, but it's which way can I project those? And I'd not to speak for all of our listeners, but I think a fair number of our listeners are very cognizant of the fact of how awkward their feelings can be if they project them to the people that report to them. So you already have that guard built in. Hey, this is a thing I don't talk about. Oh, hey, whoa, getting a little bit too close to that rail. Don't want to touch it. So it can be a hard thing to let that down in a scenario where like the dynamic has shifted, and that's a good thing to let that down.
I mean, we're talking about the F word here, right? Like feelings. We don't bring that F word to work very often. We've trained ourselves not to do it because it's not part of business. And that's a really unproductive mindset that I'm glad to see starting to break down a little bit. I mean, it's definitely something I try to break down with my teams, but it's something that seems to be breaking down more broadly across folks that care to practice conscientious management, human-focused management, because it's just information. The way that people feel, the way that people react to a thing is just information to help you know how they are processing the stimulus that they're perceiving in the environment that they exist in. The same is true of your manager, whether they know it or not. And it may feel vulnerable, it may feel dangerous, it may be a hard thing to do. And so if that's something that you're uncomfortable with, maybe find something that's simple and non-controversial and just a little bit feeling-y to share with them and just see what kind of reaction you get and kind of tiptoe into that. And you might find yourself in a really productive space that you didn't expect to be in.
That's so powerful. The flip side of that is that the inverse is not the absence of feelings. The inverse is that you lie about it.
Yes, the suppression.
Inverse is toxic. Yes. And so what happens is people are angry. And so they express anger, and that's an appropriate emotion at work. I'm angry. And it's like, but they don't say I'm angry. They just act like a jerk. And we tolerate that. Well, you know, they've had a hard week, or they didn't close this deal, or they, you know, you don't know the pressure this person's under, or whatever. You make excuses for people expressing toxic feelings, but expressing vulnerable feelings is not okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's the default masculinity of American business. It's okay to be pissed off and yelly, yes. But it's not okay to cry. God forbid we cry.
I remember the day I broke a relationship with the head of a company I worked at, where I like got emotional in their office. I was talking about some, you know, I just got out of this meeting where things got like kind of got pushed to a head, and I just was like, I got emotional with this person in the room, and I was like, oh, I made this person so extremely uncomfortable. They're like, I knew it was over from there. Like, this person had written me off because it was like not an, this was, being emotionally overwhelmed was not an appropriate state for somebody in any kind of leadership. So that was the kind of the beginning and the end of that role.
Yeah. Let's not acknowledge the emotional labor that management is by being emotional.
Yeah.
Please, anything but that.
When you're managing up, exposing that emotional vulnerability is really courageous. And saying to somebody in a more leadership position to you, my feelings are hurt right now. You actually hurt my feelings. The way that this happened made me feel untrusted, and my feelings are actually hurt right now. That's actually pretty courageous.
Absolutely.
But going down and saying, you hurt my feelings the way you gave me that feedback, that's bullying. There's a difference.
Yes.
Well, and the other thing that we would be remiss not to call out here is that the three of us exercise a lot of privilege in being able to say, yeah, I'm going to show emotion to my manager.
Yeah.
Good point.
Folks that come from an underrepresented background probably can't do this as easily and feel okay about it.
It may be completely off limits.
It may feel significantly riskier. It may be more damaging. It may make them, it may get them written off.
Yeah. That's absolutely true.
You know, one thing I want to call out here is we're talking about managing up, but there are people who manage up to us as managers. And that's a very key thing for us to keep in mind here as we're having this conversation, or as you're listening to this. If somebody comes to you with this type of a conversation, it's incumbent on you to try to process that and understand it and receive it the way you would want it to be received if you were feeding this up as well. Because no matter how much we try to be the best manager to everyone, we're going to misstep from time to time and say something, do something. There's going to be a thing where we misstep as well. And being able to receive that with the same open-mindedness, the same grace that we would hope that our managers would receive it is like, that's key to us being able to manage this as well. So thinking about taking that process, and this is a key thing that I found really helpful for me when it comes to managing up. If I'm in a situation where I'm being frustrated, where I'm not getting what I want, step back and say, okay, if I was managing somebody in my situation, what would I want them to do? And then like operating from that position gives me a really good frame of reference. And I think that's a thing that you can totally use. If you get that feedback that you're like, oh, this is really uncomfortable. Okay, well, let me turn this around. Let me try to process this. What would happen if I gave the feedback? What feedback could I give to my manager that would make them feel this uncomfortable? What would I want their response to be? And I think that can be a good guide to helping try to understand that, to try to step into those shoes that in some instances, there's just no way that three white dudes in tech can step into.
So there's a lot of really great leadership stuff in Ted Lasso, but my absolute favorite scene in the whole series is when Ted is playing Rupert in darts.
God, that's so good.
He quotes Walt Whitman. It's not actually a Walt Whitman quote. If you go dig into it, Walt Whitman never said this. But the thing Ted attributes to Walt Whitman is the quote, "Be curious, yes. Not judgmental."
It's so good.
And that rule will keep you out of so much trouble. If you can just get your brain out of that snap judgment phase to go, huh, why is this person feeling this way? Let's dig a little deeper. Let's explore this. And just ask the questions, because there's a lot of things that the people that you manage will bring to you that you don't have the lived experience of. You can't have the lived experience of because you're not them. You don't have their background. You can't understand everything they're going to bring to you.
You know what? I absolutely love the scene that you're talking about. It's great. One of my favorite scenes of the whole series, having watched it multiple times at this point. You totally brought a whole new element to it. To have two straight white guys have that conversation and to be able to apply that as broadly as you just did, totally just opened my eyes on that.
Yeah, be curious and not judgmental, kind of about yourself too. Mm-hmm. Why am I feeling this way about this thing that I'm being told? That's interesting. And I can tell you, I promise, if people bring you feedback and you find yourself feeling some type of way about it, I can tell you from experience that there is just a certain amount of therapy between you and being able to process that better. That years of therapy have brought me to a place where I can hear feedback like that. And man, I just make it my mission to get people to like lure people closer and closer to being able to tell me difficult truths. Because I want to, it's so fun to show them that not only do I take feedback like a champ, I eat that for breakfast. It makes me better. I like getting better, and I have the ability to process feedback as data. And I've learned to be curious about that. But that does take work, and it won't happen magically at first. And what I learned at first is give yourself some space. And what the magical thing that I did in between where I was and where I am now, where I can just process it almost instantly and be like, oh, wow, let me think about that. Wow, that's really good feedback. Thank you. I'm going to work on that. Between that was, that's really hard for me to hear. I need about 24 hours to process that, but I promise you I will thank you for this feedback. Like, I thank you for giving it to me, but I will be able to thank you truly about once I've had a chance to process it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the points that Susan David makes in her book, Emotional Agility. The idea that feelings are just information. And the real trick is to getting the mental interrupt in place between when you hear a thing and when you do something about it, so that you can actually interrogate that feeling. You can go, why am I feeling this way? Why am I reacting this way to this thing? Because that's really where the magical information is understanding why you have such a visceral reaction to something that somebody just told you. And it's the process that you just described, Brandon, that you got to by going through therapy, by doing the 24-hour delay. You learn to be better at having that mental interrupt and having it on the spot and be able to interrupt that initial visceral reaction long enough to do something productive with it versus doing something stupid with it, which is the general thing that humans do when they hear information they don't like.
Man, you've recommended this book. I've downloaded it. I have not yet read it. So that's going in the queue. I'll add it to the show notes as well.
It is a good book.
So managing up inherently means a loss of control over these factors. We love coming back to the factors that we can't control because we can be better managers because we choose to. But not everybody's going to make those choices, and you don't have control over whether your boss does. And actually, some of the most miserable work experiences of my life is trying to get control over whether my boss gets better at their job. I can say for a fact that is a failed form of managing.
Has that ever worked? I don't think so.
But
again, we need the video now. I'm telling you, like, we just need to have like a.
But I can describe that firmly as a failed, repeated attempt at managing up. Let me make my boss better at their job. That will not work. Do not attempt. Experts only. Double black diamond. No, you'll probably die. Skull and crossbones.
It's not even that. It's just
you're into heliskiing at that point. It's not even double black diamond.
It's straight up to like, let's go ahead and get your measurements. We need to get the coffin ready. Like, this isn't.
Did you remember your avalanche vest when you left the house this morning?
Okay, so admitting that one of the aspects of managing up is you are now dealing with things that you don't have control over. You don't have control over whether your boss is actually going to be safe for feedback. You don't have control over whether, you know, like all these things that we're talking about are increasingly appropriate ways to deal with this stuff. And you do need to get something done. And you are finding yourself kind of blocked. Are there workarounds to that when you find yourself in a position where you're not getting everything that you need? Because I've also learned just saying the words, I'm not getting what I need from you, doesn't turn out to be as actionable feedback as I might think it is at the time.
I mean, it depends. It depends on what you need, right?
That's Travis's line. Travis, say the line.
Hang on. I'll pass this over. I mean, it really does depend. Nick, would you like to expand on that?
Thank you.
I mean, like, you know, the thing is, your manager is very busy. You are very busy. The thing that shortcuts some of this, if the thing you need is very tactical, is just be very crisp about the tactical things that you need from your manager. Be very direct about the specific requests that you have for them and what that's going to unlock for you, why it matters, make sure they have the context, and just give them that punch list. Because often that's a shortcut to getting, if you need direct results, that's a shortcut to getting that.
100% agree with that.
Wow. Yes.
Like I have had managers in the past who very much, hey, these are the things I need from you. And it's that broad, like, this is the support I need to move forward in what I am trying to do. But that, hey, I need this thing unblocked because this is causing friction right now that doesn't need to be here. And 6 hours later, it's completely solved. New company policy, everything has moved out of the way. But it comes down to the difference in the feedback. One of those is very, very tactical. Hey, here's the thing that I need. The thing that I need to not happen in the future. Is there any way that this can happen? Oh yeah, no, that's totally doable. And that gets knocked off versus the more broad, this is the general direction that I'm heading. I need to have covered ahead in that direction. Those are two totally different conversations. But that comes back to kind of a topic that I don't think we've really touched on. we talk a lot about like understanding and kind of matching our styles to manage the people that we manage. How do we adjust ourselves? The inverse is also true. What adjustments should we make to deal with the people who are managing us? Because like everyone has their own management style. What can we do? What should we do when we're dealing with somebody that maybe doesn't manage the way we are? Again, this kind of comes back to there's a friction here. It's probably that your manager doesn't manage exactly the way that you manage. So that's introducing some sort of dissonance there where you feel like, oh, I would do this, I would do that, and therefore I would feel supported. How do you approach that? How do you process that? And how do you move forward in that world to kind of adjust yourself to like, hey, these are the things I need to do.
So before we go there, I want to pull us back to the tactical for just a split second to point out one other thing that's really important, and that's understanding your manager's sphere of influence.
Ooh, yeah.
Because it's really easy to ask your boss for something they can't do if you don't understand what they actually are capable of in the organization.
That is an excellent, excellent point. And I think that that is one of those things that is so dependent on the organization you're within. If you are in one of the FANG style companies where you're talking about global sphere of influence, where maybe your boss can influence something that's the concept of a continent, but maybe they can't, like trying to understand that and realize how big that is. Especially if you're switching sizes of company, if you're going from a FANG company to a small startup, totally different, or the inverse, you're going from a small startup where your boss can literally change everything about your company to a larger organization where there's not much that your boss can actually change. Understanding the context in which you're operating there is a huge thing.
A couple thoughts about that. That's also situationally dependent. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm on the committee that's defining that role and I can actually slip that in, or I am, you know, talking to the CEO tomorrow and I'll be able to have a conversation about that or whatever. It's very situational. And the other thought I have is any manager above like the 25th percentile would be very honest about those limits. And you can literally just ask. In fact, I think that's a managing up life hack for sure, is just asking your boss if they haven't volunteered this information. Hey, I think I need this done. What's the limit to your sphere of influence on this? And that is that there's almost no vulnerability needed to expose that to your employees, because that's just good information for them to have. It makes your job easier.
Yes, but this actually ties in really nicely with the direction Travis was taking us about adjusting to the manager that you have. If you have a manager that is, you know, you're in a hyper growth organization and you have a manager that's kind of gotten bumped up really fast up the ranks and hasn't really had the time to acclimatize to breathing the air at the altitude that they suddenly find themselves at, they may either not know this, or they may not have the confidence to share it with you.
Yeah.
Like they may not volunteer this information. So what you just said, Brandon, is really critical. The way to get that information is just to ask them, you know, here, this is the thing that's really bugging me, or this is the thing that my team is really on fire about. How much control do we have over this?
So that's a really great framing right there. And it's a slight contrast to what Brandon just said. How much control?
I use the word we very much on purpose there.
How much control do we have over that versus how much control do you have over this? Yeah, that's a great like slight tweak that you can almost miss.
And on adapting the style, maybe this is a little reductive because there's so many training things on this, and this is what's been beaten into me at this point. But I actually think this is probably true. I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think the most important stylistic thing to adapt to is a boss's communication style. And when I was a young pup, of a manager, I attached value judgments to communication style. Mm-hmm. This person's a jerk. This person's terse. This person just only cares about X, and I care about people. And if you're new, you're going to feel that way. I think that's pretty much inevitable.
Yeah.
And if you're in management and you're relatively new to it, the vast likelihood is you're in it because you care about people, and also you care about what people think of you. And a lot of things are going on for you, and I'm so sorry that this is you've got a hard road ahead of you. We're here to help. The communication style thing that honestly, this is so rote, but some of the best things I've ever done have been going through these communication style seminar quiz. You know, they seem like, you know, magazine quizzes or something, but they're rooted in some kind of science, if not at least useful pseudoscience. And it teaches you the fact it, no matter which one of these it is, it teaches you the fact that different people have different communication styles and value things differently in communication. Sometimes they value people that get to the point. Sometimes they value, like me, talking about how we feel about things. Yeah. Sometimes they value making sure that everybody feels good about, okay, did we all walk away feeling good about this thing? Did we have a good time having this conversation? People have just different values in terms of communication, and understanding what the categories of values are and roughly where your boss sits in that is so useful, because maybe they just want you to get to the point and they want a bullet list, or maybe they want tons of context so that they can process the data. So you're likely to either frustrate or delight somebody, and it's really useful to know why.
And it's going to change over time.
True. Mine has.
Like if you've got a if you're in a brand new relationship with a new boss, you may not have any trust with them yet. They may need a ton of evidence from you for whatever you're asking for. 6 months from now, you may have proven yourself to them time and time and time and time again, and your word is gold, and they don't need a lot of proof at that point. In fact, they get annoyed by proof if you give them too much context around the thing that you're asking for.
Yeah, that's like, whoa, stop.
And so it's like, you know, gauging that over time, growing that relationship and scaling it and figuring out what your manager needs from you at that point.
Yep. I can't say enough good things about trying to understand what your boss values. And if your boss is super baller, they probably have a plan for helping you understand that. And heaven help me, if it's a manager read me, it's a manager read me.
Yeah.
Well, they'll have their quiz results in the manager read me, and that's useful. I'm sorry, it is. It is. It just is.
No, I think if you go back into the back catalog, we have an episode on this. And I think the place we landed is that the manager read me is not useful to the people that report to you, but it's useful to you to help guide that.
You can give them the verbal rundown in your first
one. To help guide that conversation. And to, more than anything, to understand how you process information. If I had to explain how I process information and how I want it, and how I want to provide feedback, how I want feedback provided to me, and I go through that process, that's illuminating. I don't have to tell anybody else after that. Anything that went into that document, you can literally like print it out, light it on fire, burn it. You don't need it after that point. Just going through the process is useful.
I mean, I think it's worth pointing out, now that we've shifted on to focusing on communication, we spent the first 30 to 40 minutes of this episode literally talking about communication, if you go back and listen to it. So much of that was about communication style, being direct, leaning into feelings, all of that stuff. Because really, that is the essence of what managing up is. It's about figuring out how to build effective communication with your manager in a way that gets you the things that you need to do your job and to support your team. Like that's the essence of it.
I want to take that and tweak it slightly to make it a little bit more expansive. The essence of being a manager is about understanding and managing your communication style so that the people around you are doing the things that make them the most effective and make you the most effective. And that goes in both directions. I think the same process that you go through with dealing with your manager is the same process you go through with the people that you're managing.
Again, the power dynamic being different, your job is to build a more universal adapter. It's kind of the software principle of be liberal in what you accept and strict in what you send out.
Yeah.
I would pair that as well. the communication aspect is really valuable, and maybe this almost fits under the umbrella of communication, but there is a skill that a person develops, and I've seen this come very naturally to some people and very unnaturally to some people, and it is the idea of stakeholder empathy. And if you want to find yourself in possession of endless stakeholder empathy, go run a business. Because when you're like, your ability to sleep at night is on the line based on closing deals and signing contracts or signing up customers. When you own and operate a business, your stakeholder empathy is 100% because you are the business and you deeply personalize. I don't know anybody that runs a business that doesn't over personalize it somewhat. No, you just do. It's an extension of who you are. And so the higher up you are in an organization, the more likely you are to personalize it to some extent, the broader your perspective is about what the impact that somebody has, let's say an individual developer. I know the impact that an individual developer's choices make on business outcomes. And that means my stakeholder empathy is now, not naturally necessarily, but certainly through practice, very, very high. Mm-hmm. And then you meet some people who are completely oblivious. And they just haven't had the experiences necessary to be able to connect what it is that they do. And if your goal is to manage up, you're going to have a bad time if you're oblivious. If somebody has to point out to you like why the thing that you care about doesn't actually matter in the way that you think it does, or you're working on something that doesn't have the kind of impact that gets the attention of people at a stakeholder level, or you're actually doing something potentially harmful in the broad perspective of the business, with higher levels of stakeholder empathy, by which I mean, what is the business trying to accomplish? What, and then run down the chain to understand what it is that I do. How does what I do from day to day positively affect our collective goals as an organization? And to me, a manager's job is to facilitate that. And most companies are really bad at this. They just aren't. They're bad at this. They're very, too many layers, too much noise, too many different goals. People's personal agendas get in the way. People get siloed. Like all of nature is against you in an organization making those connections. And so in addition to working on communication, which is the skill of fishing this information out and staying in a certain kind of alignment to get what you need, what you actually need is to understand how what you do and could positively impact the entire organization, and then look at those options. And now you have all the flexibility in the world to pick, man, there are like 25 things I could theoretically do.
Yeah.
Out of those, what is most interesting to me and the most impactful? And you have so much more autonomy when you find yourself in that position. I've gotten in situations where what I want to do is super different from what the business thought they hired me for. And it doesn't matter because I know what they actually need. And when I go in and say, hey, I've done some analysis, here's what I think you're trying to accomplish, let me do a check on that. Is this what we're trying to do? Okay, well, this is what I think we should do to get there. And it's completely different from what I've been asked to do. And it doesn't matter. My thing wins. Because they're like, if that works, you're right. And I'm willing to take the risk on it. Sure. Go for it. Here's my signature. Here's what you need.
Yeah, I mean, that is sitting at that intersection of data and information. If you have the data and can turn that into information, information is something you can act on. Raw data is just numbers. There's not much you can do with it. But information is something you say, oh, this is the direction we're supposed to be headed. Be able to bridge that chasm between those two. And it seems like you're saying the same word there almost.
Yeah, but I hadn't thought about that before. One of them helps you make a decision.
Mm-hmm. That was an area that I spent a fair amount of time in when I was in journalism, is how do you take this just raw data? Oh, this many crimes was committed. This much money was provided to these candidates. And how do you turn that into something that you can actually understand and process and make some decisions about?
And there's a very quick way to shut down your feed of information. And it goes back to what you just said, Brandon, the idea of being liberal in what you accept and specific in what you put out. If you have a very narrowly defined set of ways that your manager can communicate with you, they're going to get frustrated and quit giving you information. You're not going to get the data that you need to do your job. And so, yes, you can nudge them towards ways that are helpful to communicate with you over time. You can gradually get them to a way where it's a more native way for you to receive information. But you have to start from a place of very broad acceptance and realize that they're trying to do their best to communicate with you, trying to do their best to work with you, and give them the benefit of the doubt early on.
Yeah. It's so sad when that breaks and it's like, I have so much valuable information to give you and you won't be safe to take it.
And it gets back to what you said about ascribing value and judgments to communication styles. It's just information. And when you overly attribute values to that, then you don't get the information that you need to do your job. And you don't have, in a managerial relationship, when you're working with your boss, the power dynamics are such that you can't shape that quite as quickly as you would like sometimes. So, I mean, to quote a product manager I worked with previously, you can choose to be right or you can choose to be married. And if you choose to be right, you're probably not going to be very effective in your job.
Are you sure that was a product manager?
It was, and she will know who she is if she listens to this episode.
So, I mean, we've talked about a lot of different aspects of broadly managing up. As we wrap this up, I want to like really dive into what the three of us think are what's the core takeaway from this? There's a whole bunch of different aspects to this. It's like managing the interpersonal relationships, managing how you show up to the relationship. What's the core thing that y'all would put at the center of managing up? For somebody who's coming to this show, they see the title, they're like, oh, this is exactly for me. They're the people who are messaging us saying, hey, where's the episode on managing up? What is the core thing that you would say, hey, this is the thing to focus on. If you do nothing else, this is the thing that will move the ball forward. And I want to qualify that with forward is not always the direction you think it's going to be, but it's at least forward.
I mean, we've been orbiting it this entire episode. I think the answer, I hope, is obvious to everybody listening right now. It's communication. It's figuring out how to build a productive relationship with whatever shape human you find yourself being managed by in a given situation. Because humans come in all shapes and forms. Humans come in all different varying levels of emotional maturity and communication capability and interaction, and the list of variables I could list out if I really wanted to here is almost infinite. The trick is realizing in that situation that that's what you have to optimize for first, because that is the foundation. You have to get the human connection there. That's communication. You have to figure out how to share information productively. Again, communication. You have to figure out how to ask for the things that you need. Again, communication. And hear what your boss needs from you. Once again, communication. Like, this is the bedrock that underlies all of this. And so if you came to us and asked us about managing up because you're really frustrated with your relationship with your boss, then that's where you need to start looking, is what is broken about the communication patterns between you and this person that's managing you? What can you do to make that just a little bit better? Because that's how you make progress.
I think for me, I love that first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And as you were saying that, the metaphor that came to my mind is communication is the tools. Communication is the tools. Information is the materials. And trust and alignment is the house that it builds that you get to live in. And so you live in this house of trust and alignment, and you're safe there. You're safe in your house of trust and alignment, and you know that you can venture out and experiment and even fail, and you can return to your house of trust and alignment, but you will not get to have it if you don't use communication build those communication skills with the with an eye toward how am I trusted to do the right thing? Is that thing in alignment with what our collective goals are? And which reinforces that trust. It's really the house's trust. It's like the alignment is like I'm trusted to do something that's in alignment with what we're trying to accomplish together. None of that stuff gets to happen if you don't bust out the tools. And so if you find yourself in a position of feeling frustrated in managing up, unless you're in an abjectly toxic work environment, and those do exist, and I'm so sorry if you're in one, the answer the majority of the time in it is to strengthen those communication skills in a way that lets you build that.
One thing I want to underscore in what you said, Nick, you were talking about like building that trust step by step and moving forward. It's so easy to assume that we can have one conversation and everything's changed. Okay, we're turning a new leaf. We're done. We've solved this. to poorly paraphrase from Rich Roll, we overestimate what we can accomplish in the short term with like a big process change, and we underestimate what we can do with slow incremental change and slowly moving the ball forward. That making it just a little bit better today and a little bit better tomorrow and a little bit better the day after that, we can move the ball a whole lot further than we can by the whole, okay, let's flip the table and change everything today conversation. Which, I mean, frankly, the table flipping conversation is a whole lot more satisfying. It's a lot more satisfying to have that, okay, everything has changed, we're moving forward, than to, hey, we're slowly moving it to where we want it to be.
Yeah, it turns out you have to say it to your manager 7 times too. That's not just a rule of thumb for the people that report to you.
Oh boy, you're getting really close to quoting some doer wisdom there. Gonna win you over to OKRs yet.
All right, folks. I think let's wrap it there. Thanks everyone for joining us. Travis and Nick, thank you as always. This was a really stimulating conversation, and I was really nervous about this personally. I'm glad we decided to actually tackle it. It is a broad topic, but I love the way that you wrapped it up. And for everyone listening, thanks for joining us. If you have thoughts or questions or things that you'd like us to cover, you can get at us at Managing Up Show on Twitter. We love your comments and suggestions, and love to hear your feedback. I'm also on Twitter. I am TeViking on Twitter.
I am NMeans on Twitter.
And I am T Swicegood most everywhere.
Thanks everyone for joining us, and we will see y'all next time.
Thanks y'all.